Hare Krishna, welcome everyone. In this auspicious day of Govardhan Puja, so we'll discuss some katha. So can we briefly summarize what we discussed so far? We did 9 verses, 6 chapter, right? Or at least, you know, what we covered last class. We talked about mainly control of mind, right? So some of the take home points or some of the points, you remember?
If we control the mind, it's friend. Sense. If we cannot control, then it's
enemy. Enemy. Okay.
And it always stays with us.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to kill us many lifetimes, right?
Yeah.
So how then how do we control the mind practically?
Superior.
Yeah, we discuss so many.
Try to ignore the mind.
Yeah, so many practical ways we thought of how to engage the mind. Okay. Then any more points?
You said some point maybe adhering to the dictation of the super soul.
Yeah, so okay, our spiritual master's instructions.
Just said to be satisfied with and be grateful for what you have, so much.
Points, yeah.
And you know, practicing the austerities that that's all I have. So that's all Mataji covered as usual.
Then so that will 5 and 6.
More perspective, so it's enemy when it's attached to sense objects. And friend when detached from
sense objects. So basically when it's attached to Krishna, it becomes friend. Yeah, when it's attached to sense objects, it becomes our enemy. Yeah, that's a very nice point. Then, next verse 7 and 8.
So, give the order. 7 is good, 8 is better, 9 is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, basically more advanced. So, these are symptoms of one who has controlled his mind. So, let's say sometimes we feel, this is the illusion we have sometimes. At least we know that while chanting, we cannot focus. But at least we feel like the rest of the day, somehow I'm able to focus my mind. And does anybody have this feeling?
No, at all times my mind is working.
But somehow, I don't know, at least we feel like, oh, at work I'm focusing, at cooking I'm focusing. But we don't observe that the mind is wandering. That's the question. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Because while chanting, we are trying to focus. There is nothing else, right? Close your eyes, focus on the holy name. So we can easily catch that the mind went away. Because we easily miss the rounds, like, you know, beats. But whole day, because there's so many objects around, even one moment we see something, we feel, oh, it's part of the game, but no, it's actually going away, taking us away from the focus of, you know, let's say I'm doing some project or something. The whole day it's happening actually, we don't catch it. But at least I used to feel, whole day I concentrated work, everything so nicely, how come chanting I'm not able to do? No, but the whole thing is there.
Anytime I'm like chanting, like, I have like every important thing comes into my mind. Like, it feels like everything is more important.
Prioritization happens.
They say planning happens, everything happens in plan. So the best time, Brahmapurta, right? Plan. So did anybody analyze why while chanting all this trouble happens?
Don't try to think of pink elephant problem.
That's what
the problem. If you are trying to say focus, and that's when mind wants to run away. What I was thinking. If you let it after some time, like, you know, at least like some time it will come a little bit and then it will go back.
Actually, this chapter later on, Arjuna is going to ask the same question. No, this yoga process is so difficult to follow, Krishna, you know, I cannot do it. Okay, then that Krishna gives practical steps, you know, what to do. It's very useful for all of us. So the thing is, you know, chanting Krishna is a pure holy name, right? Unless we are very pure, holy name is not going to reciprocate with us. It's not a fruitive activity. like anything, we can get things done. Like, let's say, you know, I'm cooking or something, you can see the result done, right, immediately, or you know, something else. It's a fruitive activity, we get the result back. But because chanting is a pure activity, it doesn't immediately, we don't get the response, reciprocation immediately. We don't get the taste immediately, you know. So many, that's what we said, right, once Prabhupada said 40 years it takes to perfect the chanting. We told, right, we shared once, right? I didn't share?
No.
So, some disciple asked Prabhupada, you know, what's the time, you know, it takes to perfect the chanting. Prabhupada says, average 40 years. He said, it took me 40 years. Of course, maybe he's humble. That's the standard, you know, or rather, we can expect to chant 40 years and then we can perfect our chanting. But then another Maharaj was telling, usually people don't stay that long. Nobody sticks around 40 years. But if they stick around, then they can influence the world in a very miraculous way.
Mm.
Because they have the potency now of the holy name. And that, so we can now see when we started. What age we will be when we are 40 years. On average, of course, there are special mercy cases, you know, if we can submit to spiritual master, then, you know, we can get special mercy from spiritual master, that's exception, but otherwise, no, on average, because, you know.
So, for Mataji, you have been chanting for so long, how actually your mind is clicking, like when you are sitting for chanting, like every now and then, or it's like for some time or some time, and then sudden mind goes somewhere again, you bring it back?
Yeah, now it's very, you know, it's especially after children, the quality is gone very, you know, very difficult, because I don't even get at least one round fully. Maybe now it's getting better, now that they're sleeping like that, you know, their pattern. At least few rounds I can do, close my eyes. But they, every time they make sound, I have to keep seeing, you know, what they're doing. You know, I have to tap them, because they get up prematurely, you know. I expect them to get up at 9. Sometimes they try to get up earlier, so I have to watch so that I can put them dress so I can chant some round. So for that I have to watch and do that. So no, it's now it's tough for me. I cannot concentrate so much. But at least the time when we were doing, you know, it was very nice. Yeah, it was very nice. At least I felt that the whole, most of the time I was with the holy name. I don't know. That's what I felt. And the observation I had was that the chanting we did before Mangalarti at home, it was tough. Even though it's Brahmamurta time, we used to get up at 4. 4:30 we start chanting till 5:30. So that's Brahmamurta time actually. Still somehow we are not able to focus, because only both of us in front of Tulsi Maharaj. But after Mangalarti, if you chant, that was very easy, because Mangalarti, that's the, you know, technique, or rather, you know, that's the, you know, the advantage Prabhupada gave. There are different songs with the different tunes. So that helps focus the mind. The move, when you move from one tune, one song to the other song, it will help you concentrate on the mind and the song and the altar and everything. So by the end of Mangalarti,
yeah,
your mind is very free and very clear and very calm. So now when you sit for chanting, it becomes very easy, very easy. And also with the environment, the potency, spiritual atmosphere is there in temple.
Mm-hmm.
And all the devotees, they come here, they're only for chanting.
Mm-hmm.
So the potency is there also. So that chanting was much easier than compared to earlier. That's what I noticed. And now, pretty much whole day we are at home, so, you know, everything is gone. But the thing is, what, one thing which I heard, I think I shared with a couple of them, is that, so what is the goal, you know, what is the goal of our chanting? One second, I'll just stop this, make sound. So what is the goal we want to achieve by our chanting? Not eventually Krishna Prema, but interim. What is it, what are we doing by chanting?
Purifying ourselves.
To chant better.
So, to convey our intent that we want Krishna.
Yeah, basically the prayer is, Krishna give me service, okay. But
how do I develop that love for Krishna? As of now it's like, if you do it, that is good. That's not out of that.
Yeah, we don't have love, right? So we know we are doing sadhana bhakti, so we don't have love. So we are doing out of duty, that's okay. So basically the essence of chanting right now is that we are trying to do it to please Krishna. That, you know, that's what we are expressing our, you know, somehow or the other, Krishna is pleased by our efforts to approach him. And one of the main method which our acharyas have told is to chant his holy names. Because anybody's name you call, suddenly they get their attention, right? In class, suddenly I say Swami Prabhu, immediately, oh, what is she telling, right? We immediately get their, and then, so imagine if you are chanting Krishna's name so many times. So, you know, Krishna is getting his attention basically. Okay, this person, you know, really wants to come back to me. Okay, I'm watching now. So, essence is to please Krishna. So, the initial stages, when we have the time, when we have the, you know, facility to do it, we should do it as much good quality as possible. Every time we should do it. But the thing is, Krishna is pleased with our service attitude. So what, when we used to chant nicely, but then I knew that I didn't have the proper service attitude. Rest of the day, you know, I may not be ready to do any service if somebody asks. I just do chanting properly, but you know, I'm not ready to submit to service. So then that my chanting, that quality of chanting, that chanting was not really so pleasing to Krishna. At least that's what I heard in the lecture. But then, now, because my service is to, you know, take care of them as the servants of Krishna, now my service attitude is increased. The quality of chanting is not there, but the attitude is increased. So we are hoping, or you know, that's what we heard, is that now it's much more pleasing to Krishna. Even though now it's a struggle, you know, every minute, we are shy. Of course, it doesn't mean we should take it light that, okay, it's going to be like this forever and kids keep growing on, problems will keep increasing. Whenever we get chance, we should try to always focus on improving the quality. But at least this gives me solace that, you know, I'm trying to improve my service attitude. So that is pleasing to Krishna.
And also, I was also hearing in one of the lectures, any service that you take up in Krishna consciousness, there is some sense of tinge of personal enjoyment. Like say if I'm listening to a lecture, I like the way that person is talking. So I tend to gratify my senses. Or if I'm listening to Kirtan, or I attend Mangalarti because I like to watch DT so nicely dressed. So I'm trying to satisfy my senses again. So cooking or taking prasadam, satisfying my tongue. So chanting is one activity where the propensity to gratify your senses is the lowest as compared to other services.
Right.
So Prabhuji was saying in that lecture that in a way you are conveying your intent more that I'm not doing this for myself. I want to please you.
Very nice, very nice.
So
that's very good.
One of the lectures,
because even in lecture also we get intellectual gratification. You know, my mind and intellect get satisfied, right? Our curiosity and all those things, right? Usually. And but chanting, you know, there is nothing, no dialogue, nothing. So that's why it's a very pure activity. That's why to sustain, we need to be at a certain level. Otherwise, after some years, people will just give up. Okay. So that's fine, right? What else? So then there is higher, more and more levels. And finally, last verse, ninth verse, the advanced person, he treats friends and enemies also equally. Okay, so these are all, you know, we can hope to achieve these levels. So then, now we'll cover today's section. From 10 to 32, we discussed this. These are further stages of yoga practice, or rather, these are the details of Ashtanga Yoga. No, really, the practitioner is going to talk about now, real the practice, you know, how it's going to be and how somebody can achieve perfection and what is the symptoms and all those things. So these few verses will go very quickly because it's all mainly the process which we would not follow. But Prabhupada kindly, you know, tells, you know, how this applies to a Krishna conscious person, how he's already fulfilling these steps. So, you know, we'll try to focus on those sections and we'll quickly move on to a verse which I want to cover really. Hopefully we'll have time. So we'll read this verse, text number 10. Yogi yuchita satadam atmanam rahasisthita ekaki yata chittatma nirasir aparigraha. A transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. So here, if we read, so essentially, you know, this describes the highest stage, or rather, you know, even practice also. He should always engage, even in the topmost stage, should engage body, mind and self. He should live alone in a secluded place. Later on, Prabhupada comments that, you know, It really literally means that actually. For a yogi, he really has to give up his family, go to a forest and live. Forest or hills or Himalaya, such a Prabhupada says, it's not at all practical. So whatever yoga people are doing here in studios and all, he's saying this not really comes in par with what Krishna is describing. So that's not there. And you should carefully control the mind, and you should be free from desires, basically material desires, and feelings of possessiveness. So how does a Krishna conscious person achieve all these things? You know, Prabhupada in the first paragraph, he says, I will just summarize the paragraph. He says that actually, a person who is approaching Krishna as Bhagavan is directly Krishna conscious. Whereas a person who is approaching Brahman, a Jnani, and a person who is approaching Paramatma, who is a yogi, they are indirectly Krishna conscious. Because they are also features of Krishna, right? So they are indirectly Krishna conscious. That's the one point I want to tell. So, and then he says, the person who approaches Krishna is completely directly Krishna conscious, and he's a topmost transcendentalist. We know that, right? He's, you know, because he has complete absolute truth. Then we'll just read the last paragraph where Prabhupada talks about how a devotee is satisfying all these requirements. It's very interesting to see. Basically, what does it mean for us to, okay, let's analyze. What does it mean for us to engage his body, mind and self in relationship with Supreme?
To give everything.
So basically we use our body to serve Krishna, mind to serve Krishna, and self, soul to serve Krishna, right? Then what does it mean to live alone in a secluded place for us?
With a devotee association.
Yeah, Prabhupada says if you live in devotee association, that's what is import for us. Mm-hmm. And then carefully control mind, yeah, we engage the mind in Krishna service. Free from desires means we desire only service to Krishna, hopefully one day. Then that becomes free from material desires and feelings of possessiveness. Oh, we'll think, you know, it's all Krishna's property. No, nothing belongs to me. One day, hopefully. That also. Then that's how Krishna conscious person satisfies automatically the criteria of a yogi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So let's read the last paragraph, which just, you know, summarizes this point.
A Krishna conscious person well knows that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he is always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. He is always aloof from material things because he is always transcendental. He is always alone, having nothing to do with persons not in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, the person in Krishna consciousness is a perfect yogi.
So
he
is saying, you know, how Krishna conscious person is meeting the requirements of a yogi, and he's saying it's a perfect yogi. You know, this point, he accepts things which are favorable to Krishna consciousness and rejects things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. This is actually, there are six aspects of surrender. These are the first two aspects. I don't remember the rest of them. First two are like to accept things favorable and reject things which are unfavorable. Six aspects of surrender. Sharanagati. And then later it's humility and accepting Krishna as only protector, like that, you know, we can look it up. It's a nectar of devotion. So this is actually, you can understand, these are the initial stages of surrender, basically. The point is, mind is always, it has this function of accepting and rejecting. That's what it does all the time. You know, even in material world or, you know, when we're dealing with material things, it always says, I like this, I don't like this. You know, okay, winter, it's cold, reject. You know, summer, it's warm, Bangalore, weather is good, I accept. Right? This sweet, I like it, I accept. You know, this, it's too spicy, I reject. That's what mind does, always. So, this way we are engaging that propensity in Krishna conscious way. So, now we don't do based on what our senses like or not like, or what our previous, our, you know, parents say, what we should do or we should not do, or what our husband says, but we do what Krishna, you know, what is favorable for Krishna and what is unfavorable for Krishna. So then we become completely transcendental to all this mind and dictations of senses, all these so many criteria. Right? So we just have to measure. So essentially, for example, I can tell a practical point about this. People usually ask questions, right, initially, oh, Mataji or Prabhuji, should I buy TV? Or, you know, should I buy a laptop? These questions come. So then what is the, you know, answer? What is the criteria for two? What's an answer for that?
How do you
what is
you
for?
Yeah, exactly. So if you are going to use these things in service to Krishna, that means you are going to use it favor. It's going to be favorable for Krishna consciousness. Accept it. If it's not going to be favorable for Krishna consciousness, it's good. Most of the time, like, let's say in-laws are there, it's going to be used in a very, you know, negative way. And small kids are there, they should not watch TV. It's always going on and they'll watch and all this. It's not going to be favorable. Then reject. So that's the criteria of obtaining anything, right? Whether it's going to be useful for our service to Krishna. Okay, so then we'll go to the next verse, 11 to 12. Suchau deshe pratishtapya sthiram ashanam atmana nati ushritam nati icham chailagni jitutosh kushotaram tatraikagram mana prithva yata chitte priya priya upavishyasane yunchyat yogam atma vishuddhaye. Okay, this verse talks about how we should sit. Next verse, next two verses talks about how we will meditate. This is, you know, how many details are there in the way he should sit. So the translation, to practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusha grass on the ground and then cover it with the deer's skin and a soft cloth. The seat should be neither too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses and activities and fixing the mind on one point. It's over. So many criteria are there. Just to sit. To make that place, it takes one day of endeavor, I think, or I don't know how many days.
We'll be in jail now.
Jail?
Yeah, deer skin.
No, it's actually the skin of a dead deer. We don't kill the deer to get the skin, but skin of a dead skin, dead deer. So much complex, right, the process. On the contrary, what did we hear about our holy name? Just similar to this, huh?
You can do anywhere.
Yeah.
Even during, especially during death.
Especially?
During death, right? So,
death.
So, that's the most
worst
time, right?
Yeah.
So, there itself you are saying that means anywhere is possible.
Anywhere is possible. Yeah. And also, you know that verse, right? What is that verse? Shashakam, he says, you know, there are no rules and regulations for chanting. Namna makari bhavata nirjasarva shaktis tata arpita niyamita smaranena kala. Who knows the translation? So Lord, you have invested all your potencies in the holy name and there are not even hard and fast rules to chant your holy name. But still, I am so unfortunate that I don't have any taste for chanting your holy name. So Lord is from his side very flexible, you know, okay, you chant anytime. And there are no hard and fast rules and regulations. Everything is given. But from our side, you know, Krishna still, I am so unfortunate, I don't have any taste to chant your holy name. So that's our state. That's one of the Shishashtakam verse. So contrary to this, you know, our process is so, you know, easy. We don't have to follow all this rigid. Of course, to make proper progress and attention, there are things we can follow, like posture and prayer and pronunciation, all those things. So then, some of the points here. We can read the last paragraph. The so-called, rather a little bit, the so-called yoga societies, where Prabhupada is saying how the general day-to-day yoga actually is not fulfilling these.
The so-called yoga societies in big cities may be successful in earning material benefit, but they are not at all suitable for the actual practicer of yoga. One who is not self-controlled and whose mind is not undisturbed cannot practice a meditation. Therefore, in the Brahmana Naradiya Purana, it is said that in Kali Yuga, the present Yuga or age, when people in general are short-lived, slow in spiritual realization, and always disturbed by various anxieties, the best means of spiritual realization is chanting the holy name of the Lord. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. This is a very nice verse. Many of us know this. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gati Ranyata.
Three times it's said. You know, somebody, something is emphasized three times means it's like, you know, we should really accept it. There is no other way in this Kali Yuga except for chanting the holy name as a means for deliverance. Anyway, we are clear. We don't have so much doubt about this, right? It's so easy process, still we cannot follow ourselves. Yeah, so we'll move on then. Then next, 13 to 14, how to meditate, Krishna is going to talk about. Samam kaya shiro grivam dharayan achalam stira samprekshya nashikagram svam dishaschanavalokayan prashantatma vigathavir brahmachari varvrate stita mana samyamya chamanchitto yukta asitam anpara. One should hold one's body, neck and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Wow. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. So, Krishna is clarifying here, what should be the goal of object of worship of the yogis? That is Paramatma within. No, the Paramatma within, which is Krishna. And the procedure is, one should hold one's body, neck and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. So to do that, actually, basically your eyes have to be half closed. It cannot open completely, it cannot, because you have to see here, it's so close. At the same time, you cannot close completely because you are seeing, right?
Mm.
So that's the way you can avoid sleep. Also, at the same time, avoid distraction when seeing the other objects, when you are half closed. So that's the technique there. And then with unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon Krishna. These are all the criteria. And Prabhupada especially focuses on this point about free from sex life and how, that's very important for a yoga process. Because it literally means that, Krishna literally means we should really be free from sex life. So, Prabhupada says in the purport, like in Jnana or other schools, sex life is not at all entertained. In the sense, they have to completely give up, completely stop it. But only Bhakta school, there is some, there is some room for that. Because in Grastha Ashram, it's allowed. Because why, what is the reason Prabhupada says in Bhakta school it's allowed?
To get kids.
Yeah, it's a service to get progeny. That's okay. That's one thing. Other, let's make kids guesses. Why could it be? I'll give a hint. What Prabhupada is saying is, even though sex is, or rather, somebody indulges in sex in Grastha, or rather, Grastha Ashram, one doesn't get entangled when he follows the bhakti process. So why? One is we are doing for Krishna service. That's other thing is.
Kids are also for the service.
Yeah, that's okay. Other thing, that's the same point. Something about bhakti process. Because bhakti process is so powerful that eventually one loses the taste for all these lower things. Even though he indulges, that's a very, very wonderful point Prabhupada is saying. Because other schools, they don't have that much strength. They have to stop it from beginning. They have to be so qualified. Mayavadi, they can start studying only when they take sannyas. They can't even begin the process until they take sannyas. So imagine, who is qualified to study that these days. So, but whereas, we read that section of the purport, Prabhupada is saying, bhakti school, or rather, bhakti is so powerful that even though one has the desire and he is allowed to, start from where he is, eventually he gets so much higher taste that we talked about that verse from Yamunacharya, right? He says, I have distaste when I think about sex with my, opposite sex. So that much potency, that much higher taste is there that automatically one loses the taste. So we'll read the second paragraph.
One who, however, follows the rules and regulations of the married life, having a sexual relationship only with his wife, and that also under regulation.
See that clause.
Is also called a brahmachari. Such a restrained householder brahmachari may be accepted in the bhakti school. But the jnana and dhyana schools do not even admit householder brahmacharis. They require complete abstinence without compromise. In the bhakti school, a householder brahmachari is allowed controlled sex life because the cult of bhakti yoga is so powerful that one automatically loses sexual attraction being engaged in the superior service of Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.59, it is said,
Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasa Vajjam Rasopyasya Parandrishva Nivartate.
Whereas others are forced to restrain themselves from the sense gratification, a devotee of the Lord automatically refrains because of superior taste. Other than the devotee, no one has any information of the superior taste.
Wow. So nice, right?
Vighata, vighata bhi. One cannot be fearless unless one is full in Krishna consciousness. A conditioned soul is fearful due to his prevented memory, perverted memory, his forgetfulness of his eternal relationship with Krishna. The Bhagavatam 11.2.37 says, Bhayam dvityabhinivesata
syad isad
apetasya smriti. Krishna consciousness is the only basis for fearlessness. Therefore, perfect practice is possible for a person who is Krishna conscious. And since the ultimate goal of yoga practice is to see the Lord with it, a Krishna conscious person is already the best of all yogis. The principles of the yoga system mentioned herein are different from those of the popular so-called yoga societies.
So then in the last paragraph, Prabhupada is clarifying how a devotee can be free. No, all the other criteria of fearless. No, all the other things. So again, you know, he's re-emphasizing the same point. A Krishna conscious person is already best of all yogis. You know, it's so nice, right? He's putting in the context. We are following Krishna consciousness process. Okay, what does this verse mean to us? And are we already fulfilling that? Okay, if so, then okay, let's move on. Okay, so we continue. It's okay, right?
There is one question from the previous verse. It's clearly said people in general are short-lived, slow in spiritual realization. But why still we have so many people who have a good faith in this path?
Which path? Ashtanga Yoga. Yeah, because mainly people don't want the ultimate. Nobody knows what's the goal of yoga actually. First of all, people do it mostly for peace of mind and good health, right? Or, you know, I have disease, so I do yoga. So, right, many pranayama, disease, it helps diseases. That's why they do. They don't know. That's why the Prabhupada is clarifying that those yoga, the purpose is to again realize Paramatma. Nobody these days knows that actually. Right? We just do all that. What do we know about yoga? It's just asanas. That much only we know, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing about, they don't even talk about regulation of food. Nitya Gauranga Prabhu is a smart way. You know, he teaches yoga. But slowly he starts telling, you know, you should come to mode of goodness. Otherwise, whatever, you know, you do through yoga, it doesn't work. Then, you know, stop eating meat. Slowly he introduced that, you know, this thing very smartly. But otherwise, nobody else will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like the church. They go every Sunday to do a confession, right? And then next day onwards, they start doing sins again. It's like that.
What, next confession?
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I ate some heavy meal, so let me do some yoga, asana, so, you know, get some, burn my energy. And then come again, do my eating, all these things. Okay.
Also, Patanjali Maharishi, when did he say yoga? Not these asanas, it was more just the sitting postures to do the meditation. Now this is all new kind of asanas.
Okay.
Corporate yoga.
Corporate yoga. Yeah. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse. Text number 15. So what is the result? This verse talks about the result of a long practice of this meditation and control of the mind. What happens? Yunjan evam sadatmanam yogi niyatamanasa shanti nirvana parama matsamstam adhikachati. Thus practicing constant control of the body, mind and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, his mind regulated, attains to the kingdom of God or the abode of Krishna, the cessation of material existence. So essentially while living, he is now stopping all his material desires and material activities. So he's already attained the kingdom of God. That means he's liberated from this material realm. So that's also another thing Prabhupada says, you know, these days yoga system, nobody teaches this, that the goal is to get away from this material existence. So if you read like first four lines.
ultimate goal in the practice of yoga is now clearly explained. Yoga practice is not meant for attaining any kind of material facility. It is to enable the cessation of all material existence. One who seeks an improvement in health or aspires after material perfection is no yogi according to the Bhagavad Gita.
We can stop there. So it's very clear, right? What very clear, right? Now, what should be the purpose of Gola? Goal of yoga. So this reminds me of that one incident we shared once, right? Like one materialistic person, he runs behind Prabhupada. Swamiji, give me blessings, right? Mm-hmm. I told that. Who wants to share that?
He is expecting more wealth or something. He says, okay, all...
Tell in a very dramatic way, bro. So, you know... Okay. So, he runs behind Prabhupada saying, Swamiji, give me blessings. You know, then Prabhupada knows their intent, right? So, he tries to ignore. He tries to go away. Then, but he reckons, Swamiji, please, you know, very desperately, give me blessing. Then, he understood that this person is irritating. Okay, I bless you that your material life is finished. Swamiji, no, not this blessing. Then Prabhupada said, this is the only blessing I can give you. Go. So, he doesn't want material life to be finished. That's but he wants blessing for material wealth, prosperity and all those things. So, you know, all these yogis also like that. We miss the ultimate point, but, you know, we want to get some good health and continue. So we'll read the last paragraph. No one can reach the spiritual sky. Little bit towards that.
No one can reach the spiritual sky, Vaikuntha, or enter into the Lord's eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavana, without the proper understanding of Krishna and his plenary expansion, Vishnu. Therefore, the person working in Krishna consciousness is the perfect yogi, because his mind is always absorbed in Krishna's activities. In the Vedas also, we learn one can overcome the path of birth and death only by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, the perfection of the yoga system is the attainment of freedom from material existence and not some magical jugglery or gymnastic feats to befool innocent people.
Mm-hmm. So the point is, because in the verse Krishna is saying they can reach my kingdom, right, abode of Krishna. The Prabhupada is saying, in order to reach the abode of Krishna, one has to have clear understanding of Krishna and his plenary expansion. That means only a bhakta can do it. Because otherwise, a jnani and a yogi, they have only partial understanding of Krishna, because they know only Brahman and Paramatma, the best, if they can succeed in their endeavors. So that's why he's saying those also cannot reach Goloka. They can reach only Brahman and maybe, you know, I don't know what happens to... they also get liberated. The yogis. But whereas only bhakta can reach this stage, so eventually they have to take a bhakti process in order to fulfill this. Then again, Prabhupada is saying the perfection of yoga system is attainment of freedom from material existence, not all this magic jugglery or good health or gymnastic feats or some mystic powers or things like that. Okay, so this is the verse I wanted to spend more time on. 16 and 17, that will conclude this section. So hopefully we'll cover them. So 16th talks about obstacles on yogi's progress. You know, what are some of the obstacles he should be aware of? So these also apply to all of us, so we'll spend some time on these. So while practicing, what are certain things he should be careful about? So text number 16. Nati asnatastu yogosti nachai kantam asnashnata nachai ti svapna shilasya jagrato naiva charjuna. Okay, let's listen carefully. There is no possibility of one's becoming a yogi, O Arjuna, if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. Very nice, right? Krishna is really talking to us, right? Like so practical instructions, saying one cannot become a yogi. No, that's why it's for us also. Prabhupada talks about us only. Any yogi.
Specifically the Ashtanga yogi, right? Because there is no rules in bhakti yoga.
No, we have rules, right? No, but in order to do it without too much disturbance, like if you want to go it smoothly, then better follow this. So he says one should not eat too much or eat too little. One should not sleep too much and sleep not sleep enough. So let's analyze what happens if we eat too much.
We'll feel sleepy and we'll sleep.
End of the day, let's say anyway we're going to sleep. What happens if we eat too much?
Stomach ache.
So they said that
sleep too much.
The tongue, if you eat too much,
then that's okay, but I'm just asking practically, you know, what happens next day?
Stomach
upset. No, not like so much, you know, we will not so much overeat, right?
Next day we can't eat nicely.
For this, like, let's sacrifice this eating for tomorrow, I can eat.
Tomorrow we'll eat again more.
Yeah.
We'll eat more.
Hopefully, we'll postpone that tomorrow again, we'll never eat too much. So, you know, that way we can control our eating.
Stomach to digest that, it consumes a lot of energy, and the brain has to work too much to digest those things. So what happens, because of that only fasting helps when it doesn't
matter. No. Then because of that, while trying in the sleep, we try to digest it. So we don't get proper sleep, deep sleep. And we also go into dreaming state because we are not too deep sleep.
Mm.
Because of dreaming, we tend to sleep longer. So we will not be able to get up early to do our activities.
With a deep sleep, you can get more fresh.
More fresh, yes. We don't need so much sleep, so many hours if we go deep sleep.
Mm.
So that's the side effect of eating too much before sleeping, dinner.
But I tried the other way also, Mataji. I skipped dinners, but no.
Yeah, because you're doing the other, you're violating the other.
No, I was okay with, I was not hungry. Sometimes I skip dinner, but in the morning, the same way. I can't wake up in the morning because of the dreams and everything.
Yeah.
I think it should need some practice.
Some practice, yeah.
This is Krishna Shura said, okay, people sleep for this many hours, eat this much food. This is like, you know,
from 24 hours.
This is like, we don't know what is too much or
not. Seriously, Mataji, because, you know.
That's why we read the Purport. Prabhupada gives very clearly what is too much, what is too little. Okay. So we don't have any room for ambiguity. Okay, so what happens if we eat too little?
We get tired, we can't wake up.
And sometimes, especially if you're taking care of kids in the middle, if you get up, you start feeling hungry, then you can't go back to sleep, right? So, because kids also can't go back to sleep if they're hungry, so we can't also go back to sleep. Then another thing is, what happens if you sleep too much?
If there are my kids, they'll say, we'll become bear next life.
Yes, kids will say, we become bear, so let's not sleep too much. That's one thing. Other thing, we're wasting time, right? You could have used it in Krishna service. Then, does not sleep enough, what happens? We'll see, all can be
zombie.
You can't even think properly.
You're not even a normal person next day, right? You're just on fire. Small thing happens, just act on it. No, it's like, mind is so restless and so difficult, yeah. Then what do you think about chanting? Okay. Okay, one thing I wanted to share regarding all of this, which I don't know, somehow I've been hearing this from Prabhupada lectures this whole week, last week, again and again, different lectures, same point. So what Srila Prabhupada was saying is, everything, we can do it, we just have to practice. This is what he's saying. He didn't say it literally like this, but that's the essence I got. That, you know, we should practice detachment. We should practice, you know, whatever regulation of eating, sleeping, all those things. Everything can be done. It just, you have to practice. We just have to practice that, then it just becomes habit. Yeah. Initially, we start little smaller, like take small steps. And gradually, based on our strength, we can increase. But everything can be done. We just have to practice. So that's why, the thing is, bhakti is, that's why it's an active process, I always mention. And also, it's cultivation. We cultivate the habits, we cultivate the, you know, behaviors, we cultivate our lifestyle. It has, so some work has to be done. It's not like, you know, automatically I start chanting, then all my rest of the life is set. You know, that begins with chanting, then Krishna gives intelligence, then we hear all this, then we say, oh, okay, like from today onwards, let me sleep little less, let me eat little less. So many things, you know, we can try to do so that it will help, you know, slowly adhere to Krishna's instructions and see the benefit. We changed actually. We noticed when we started going to Mangalarti, our schedule was morning eat cereal, go to work and eat lunch at work and come back, cook and then eat that fresh food and basically and then immediately sleep. So 9 o'clock after cooking obviously takes time. 9 o'clock eat, 9:30 sleep immediately. Immediately after eating, go to sleep. We tried that for some time and you know, obviously, and we, but we wanted to get up, right? We noticed that we were somehow dreaming or, you know, because it's fresh food, we wanted to eat more and already we were so hungry from afternoon, so we wanted to eat more. We couldn't stop it. So many things are, so we were thinking what to do, what to do, what to do. Then we shifted, like, you know, okay, just come back from work, immediately eat. Of course, it means like, you know, eating the old stuff. Then cook and keep it for next day. So we tried that. That was helpful. Because at least they say we should give at least 2-3 hours before sleeping. Dinner should be 2 hours before you sleep. So it digests and then you can go to sleep. So then, yeah, that was helpful. And then later we realized that dinner also was heavy because it's rice and everything, right? Then we found out, mentors, they were doing this. So what they do is they eat morning. This is what we should do actually. Breakfast, one should eat like king, right? And who knows this sloka? Afternoon, they should eat like?
Queen or minister.
Queen or minister. And dinner?
Beggar.
Eat like a beggar. So heavy breakfast and lunch in the moderate and dinner should be very light.
We do just opposite.
We do opposite, yeah. So that's the... So that way, you know, it becomes more, because morning whole day we are active, right? So it digests and we burn the energy. It doesn't come to the body. Night, what do we do? So Prabhu always says he gets tired. Marathi somehow now he got this habit of, you know, sleeping through the night. But he becomes hungry, he gets up. So I have to be there next to him all the time. That's another problem. That's okay. But he says that Narasimha, what does he do? He just eats and sleeps. So why he wants to get up and drink milk? So he keeps telling like that. So, you know, that's what the point, right? We just eat and immediately sleep. Why, you know, why we have to eat so much? What activity are we doing? What are we, you know? But somehow that lifestyle, we have set it like that. So, you know, we should make it like we can have a determination, especially husband and wife work together. We can do it to change our lifestyle and then slowly bring the whole family and change it. Yeah, when we tried that, so next we shifted to that. Morning eat proper rice dal, afternoon same thing, and night we used to eat cereal. Come back from work, eat cereal, cook and sleep. Yeah, that was very much helpful. From then on, it was very easy.
So morning you eat rice dal before going to work.
Yeah.
7 in the morning.
7 o'clock. Yeah. Because we were so hungry, night we just ate cereal and slept, right?
Yeah.
So whole night,
cereal for dinner.
Yeah. Cereal, or some people eat fruits or salad or something very light.
So from next week, all the prasadam will
be except Fridays. Friday is the only gratification for me. Whole day, whole week. So let's read this.
Then?
Sorry?
When do you have fruits?
These days I eat fruits afternoon, lunch. Oh. Mataji keeps telling me when I'm eating lunch at 4 o'clock.
I heard that grains and fruits go ill together. Is that true?
No, I don't eat grains and fruits. One meal is full of fruits for me.
Oh, full of fruits. Just
lunch, or rather 1 o'clock, 1:30 when kids sleep, I eat only fruits. Then when they wake up, I eat my lunch.
So Krishnamprabhu was suggesting that morning we should eat only fruits.
Uh-huh.
Breakfast he was suggesting, because fruits take very little time to digest. So grains and fruits shouldn't be taken together because grains would take 6 hours,
yes,
and fruits
will
digest in 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's a whole mess.
Yeah.
So morning eat a lot of fruits, and then he was asking me to carry some cereal, raw cereal, and have it after 2 hours, and then lunch, heavy lunch, and then dinner, some milk and nuts. That's what Prabhuji was suggesting.
Milk and nuts.
I'm hearing it, I'm already growing
hungry. Okay, let's read the purport. Very nice purport, let's get to the purport. We'll see practical steps, you know, what we need to do. Who will read? Somebody can read. Regulation of full purport we should read.
Regulation of diet and sleep is recommended herein for the yogis. Too much eating means eating more than is required to keep the body and the soul together. There is no need for men to eat animals, because there is an ample supply of grains, vegetables, fruits and milk. Such simple foodstuff is considered to be in the mode of goodness according to the Bhagavad Gita. Animal food is for those in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, those who indulge in animal food, drinking, smoking and eating food which is not offered to Krishna will suffer sinful reactions because of eating only polluted things. Bhujante te tav agham papaya ye pashyante atma karanat. Anyone who eats only sin, one who eats sin and anyone who eats for sense pleasure or cooks for himself, not offering his food to Krishna, eats only sin. One who eats sin and eats more than is allotted to him cannot execute perfect yoga. It is best that one eat only the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna. A person in Krishna consciousness does not eat anything which is not first offered to Krishna. Therefore, only the Krishna conscious person can attain perfection in yoga practice.
We can pause this. So far Prabhupada talked about eating. So what are some of the points? First is talking about, we should not eat animals, right? And then we should eat only prasadam. Then we'll be free from sins. That's Prabhupada was kind. He didn't tell us exact what to eat. What to eat.
That keep your body and soul together.
We should not be more than just to keep the body and soul together.
Basically to be alive.
To be alive, how much ever we require.
That is only for dinner.
So
there is a nice thing for in Ayurveda it says the first birth when you get up, eating is when you should stop eating.
Oh, Hari Bol.
But if you go, if you don't get birth,
we will not get this birth.
The first birth when you get after eating is when you stop eating. That is the.
That's enough.
You know that your stomach is full as per Ayurveda.
Correct, but if you don't get birth.
Mostly everybody gets it.
Okay, that's okay. We'll not have random discussions. Okay, listen. Regarding that, there is a very nice bhashyam of Srila Prabhupada I heard, so I wanted to share. That's why I said, oh Krishna Pate. So Brahmananda Das is Prabhupada's disciple. And Prabhupada sometimes he gave opportunity for disciples to sit with him and eat. And he's a very, very hefty. If you have seen his image, actually just recently he released his book called Swamiji, where he talked about his service to Srila Prabhupada, and also about exchanges and mainly about Prabhupada, but his service to Prabhupada. He's a very, very hefty person. Now, if you have seen Jayapathak Maharaj, I think he's equal to or a little more than him also. Okay, many of you don't see him, so it's okay. Very hefty person, so obviously his intake was very much, so much. And he sat with Prabhupada, started to eat. So he ate little bit, very little, and he got a bird. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, okay, that's enough. That's how much your stomach wants. That's how much your body needs. You can take your leave. He said. He was shocked. He was like, oh, I didn't even eat anything. I cannot sustain. Then he got shocked. But somehow he excused himself and he left. From next time onwards, he said, I made it a point that I never burp in front of Prabhupada. So after hearing that, one day when I was eating my lunch, I saw that, I noticed that I got a burp. Then I said, oh, see, that much only I need. See, I'm eating more, I thought. That's a good point.
I will notice when I eat.
Yeah. Is it real that everyone will get burp by eating?
If you drink water, immediately you will get, I think.
When I started being attentive, once I caught it. I don't know whether every time we get it. We'll see today. Okay, let's start.
Today we will practice this.
We'll have a recording session.
Today
we will practice this.
I'll remove that part.
Okay.
So there is another thing which is very important.
Okay, let's read the last paragraph. The last part. Now he's talking about reducing the eating.
Nor can one who artificially abstains from eating manufacturing his own personal process of fasting practice yoga. The Krishna consciousness person observes fasting as it recommended in the scriptures. He does not fast or eat more than is required, and he is thus competent to perform yoga practice.
Okay, we can pause. That's a very interesting point, right, Mataji? So, fasting and all should be done according to scriptures.
Scriptures.
Yeah. So, see, if you violate this also and we do whimsically, First thing is, we are not doing under the guided direction of acharyas. Second thing is, it may be detrimental to our yoga practice actually. We may think, oh, I am getting more self-control by doing this. But we don't know. Prabhupada is clearly saying, fasting also, it should not be his own personal process. Like in India, it's like Monday fasting for this lay, Mataji. No, I mean Durga, Tuesday for Saraswati. Like that every day some fasting will be there, right? It's all personally made up process. But that fasting will just only deteriorate the health. But there is no potency. There is no this thing. Because it's not guided. It's not according to scriptures. It's not blessed by an acharya. So we should be very careful. You know, some, we may have the conditioning of being brought up like that. You know, at home doing something. Amma always does this. I've been doing so long. If I stop it, what happens? But you know, when we are now under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada and his bona fide disciples, you know, we should slowly give up those things so we can adhere more and more to what they say, and then we can get more and more of their blessings, and we'll be completely under their protection. So then we don't have to, you know, speculate and see, okay, I'm not able to chant because I didn't eat yesterday well, or so many factors. You don't have to think.
So the thing is,
now we may be able to do, but later on it will affect the health. It will hurt us.
So in ISKCON, only Ekadasi, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, what else are included?
In the BBT calendar, in all the, it's given, right? What are days we have to fast? I think Monday is Prabhupada's disappearance day is coming.
Appearance day and disappearance.
So, you know, it's given in the calendar. Those are the days, and I think, yeah.
Which calendar it is?
BBT calendar.
The yearly calendar.
ISKCON calendar.
Oh, the calendar.
Yeah. Okay, let's continue for last four lines.
One who eats more than required will dream very much while sleeping, and he must consequently sleep more than is required. One should not sleep more than 6 hours daily. One who sleeps more than 6 hours out of 24 is certainly influenced by the mode of ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance is lazy and prone to sleep a great deal. Such a person cannot perform yoga.
That's it, done. No, that's okay. When we read this, we were discussing with our teacher. Look, Prabhu, 6 hours, you know, nobody can, none of us can sustain. It's too much, you know, we cannot sustain. And Prabhu said, yeah, usually it's 6 to 7, and also depends on the body. Some people's bodies are, especially elderly people, they may require more, their body gets more tired, and depends on individual person. Like that, but normally, generally 6 hours, we can aim, like we can have a project or rather deadline. Okay, maybe in few years I want to sleep 6 hours, so let me reduce little. We can try it like that, but not like, you know, we should bash ourselves like, you know, I'm in mode of ignorance. Okay, yeah, we are in mode of ignorance, but we are trying to make progress, so it's okay.
So one small thing, Mataji, so a little fat person, he went to the doctor, he said, I want to reduce weight, what you have to do? Doctor said, you have to take barley porridge, 1 cup every day. So this guy is asking, before breakfast or after breakfast?
Okay, Hare Krishna. We'll stop here? Yeah, Hare Krishna.